Today we're going to be discussing covalent bonding and specifically how covalent bonding is going to create a molecular compound. First, we have to talk about elements. But previously we had discussed elements and said that we could have individual elements from the periodic table, but in reality there is only one group of elements that can exist in nature as individual atoms. Those are our noble gases, or our group 8 elements. The reason why they're able to do this is due to the fact that they have full valence shells. Those 8 outside electrons, and in the case of helium, 2 outside electrons, make them incredibly stable. They don't want to combine with any other atoms. We call them monatomic. If we break that word down, it makes sense why we would call them monatomic. Mono, as in referring to one, and atomic, referring to atoms. So they're single atoms. Previously, we had discussed ionic compounds. When we talked about ionic compounds, we said they were crystalline solids with very high melting points. Those high melting points were due to that rigid structure created when you had those ions coming together. Now we're going to start looking at things that are very different from salts. Ionic compounds, when we talked about the ionic compounds, a lot of them were salts. We're going to look at things like hydrogen chloride and water. They are so different from salts that they are not ionic compounds. They don't even behave anywhere near what an ionic compound behaves like. Now, when we're talking about these new types of compounds, they do not easily give up or accept electrons. Previously, with ionic compounds, they readily gave up electrons or readily accepted electrons. For example, we talked about sodium. If you take elemental sodium and you throw it into water, it will explode. This is due to the fact it's trying so hard to get rid of that extra valence electron. Molecular compounds are different in that there's a tug of war that's occurring for those electrons between the two atoms. They're not giving them up. They're not taking them. They're sharing them now. Which brings us to a covalent bond. A covalent bond is when atoms are held together by sharing electrons. When we form a covalent bond, what we are forming is a molecule. Now, a molecule is an electrically neutral group of atoms that's joined together by covalent bonds. For example, oxygen. A lot of times when we think of oxygen, we're just thinking about the symbol O. In reality, oxygen is actually a combination of two oxygens, so we could refer to oxygen as O2. Another example of a molecule, a molecular compound, would be water. Water is one oxygen for every two hydrogens, and they're sharing those electrons between them. Now, we've talked about monatomic atoms, so that's when we talked about our noble gases. Now we can talk about diatomic molecules. These are going to be a molecule that consists of only two atoms. These atoms can be the same elements. When we look at the periodic table, I like to call it my diatomic L. If I start and put my finger on nitrogen on the periodic table, and I drag my finger over to fluorine, and all the way down to astatine, every element that I touched, so nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, iodine, and astatine, all form diatomic molecules. So you have N2, O2, F2. There is another exception to this. Hydrogen regularly forms a diatomic molecule. Now, atoms of different elements, they can also combine together to form a compound. And in many compounds, the atoms are bonded to each other to form a molecule. So diatomic molecules aren't necessarily always the same elements combined together. We can have carbon monoxide, which is one carbon and one oxygen. A molecular compound is a compound that is composed of molecules. So you can think of it as starting at the very simplest form, which is an element. And elements, when they come together, they're going to form a compound. Those compounds are going to form molecules, and the molecules will form molecular compounds. Now, the molecules of any given molecular compound are all the same. What this is telling us is that H2O is always, always, always water. All right. We can also think about it in the terms of if we change one little thing, it can have serious consequences. There's a joke that says two chemists go into a restaurant. The first one says, I think I'll have an H2O. The second one says, I think I'll have an H2O2. And he died. Now, the reason why he died and the whole point of the joke is that H2O is water. H2O2 is hydrogen peroxide, which is poisonous. If you drink it, you will die. Now, another difference between molecular and ionic compounds is that molecular compounds tend to have relatively low melting and boiling points. In fact, at room temperature, many are going to be gaseous or liquids. Now, ionic compounds are typically composed of a metal and a nonmetal. Molecular compounds differ again from ionic compounds in that they are composed of two nonmetals. This is the biggest thing to remember if you have to identify between a molecular compound and an ionic compound. If you look at the molecule and it is consistent of a metal and a nonmetal, you know it is ionic. If it's two nonmetals or two or more nonmetals, it's going to be molecular. Now, which brings us to molecular formulas. A molecular formula shows the kinds and numbers of atoms present in a molecule of a compound. In this case, what we're seeing is it's the chemistry language for a compound. If I say water, you know I'm talking about that wet stuff you have to drink to stay alive. If I say H2O, you know that I am talking about water. At the same time, CO2, carbon dioxide, these are things that you recognize. O2 is oxygen. Now, a molecular formula is going to show how many atoms of each element a molecule contains, but it does not tell you the molecule's structure. Some people might not think structure is very important, but structure is going to determine in many ways how these molecules interact with similar molecules and different molecules. We have different ways of writing these structures. First, we're going to start with a molecular formula, which I just explained. It's just going to be the symbol of the element with a number to indicate how much of that element is present. A structural formula is also known as the skeletal formula. This is literally the bare bones way of showing how you would write a molecular compound. If I had ammonia, which the molecular formula for ammonia is NH3, I would draw an N, and then branching out three different times from that N, I would have just draw lines, three lines, and at the end of each of those lines, I would put an H. That shows me I have one nitrogen and three hydrogens. That's the structural formula. A space-filling molecular model. This is meant to show that fuzzy cloud model that we've discussed before that goes with our current idea of what atoms look like. It is essentially looks like big spheres, and they're connected to each other. The next one is going to be our perspective drawing. Now, the perspective drawing is like a cheating way of doing three-dimensional drawing. In this case, what you're going to have is you're going to have the atom that's at the center of the molecule. So for ammonia, that would be nitrogen, so I would draw an N. If I wanted to indicate that the hydrogens were coming towards me, I would draw a wedge, all right? If I wanted to indicate that the hydrogens were going away from me or into the board, I would draw a dashed line. So dashes mean it's going into the piece of paper or the board or whatever it is that you're drawing on, and a wedge means it's coming out towards you. The last one is the ball and stick molecular model. If you have ever seen like the molecular kits where you've got little spheres, they're all different colors, and you connect them with like gray rods, that's exactly what the ball and stick molecular model is.